Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, December 20th, 2015. This is episode 1248. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcasts are brought to you by NatureBox. NatureBox is dedicated to making smart, delicious snacking easy. With over 100 ridiculously delicious snacks to choose from, and they get delivered directly to your doorstep. Visit naturebox.com/twit to get 50% off your first box now. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about tech. That makes sense, doesn't it? Computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. The phone ranger, Heather Hamana, is here to take your calls. Heather Hamana, She can be reached, as can I, at 8888-ASK-LEO. That's our number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the New York, New Jersey, Baltimore, Los Angeles. I guess I shouldn't go through all the cities. We'll just Atlanta. We'll just say United States and Canada. It would take me a while to get through the 200 stations we're on. Hello to Knoxville, Tennessee, brand new. We're on all over the place.
Well, and don't leave out Dusseldorf.
And Dusseldorf. We got somebody from Dusseldorf on the line already?
Not yet, but...
Could happen any moment.
Crossing my fingers.
You just like saying Dusseldorf. Who doesn't? If you have a question about what's going on in the world of tech, this is a good time to do it. This is, I think, the last show of the year. Next week, of course, I don't think anybody will be listening, and I probably won't have to do it. We'll do a rerun or something for Christmas. Then the following week, we've got some great stuff planned for you. And then, I'll be back in January. Holy gosh. That's kind of amazing, isn't it?
Seems far off.
Seems a long way away. I suppose it would be appropriate to look back at 2015. Fortunately, I don't have to do that because everybody in the world does it now. Facebook and Twitter and Google. Google used to do a thing called Zeitgeist, which was kind of the state of the world. But they now call it the year in search. And you can see if you go year in search, you can see 2014, you can see 2015, you can go on through the years back in time. And this is nice. They've done a nice job with this. We actually talked on one of my podcasts with the guy who puts this together. They have a digital editor, a guy who's responsible for creating content based on the information Google has. And for the first time ever this year, they're actually telling you the number of searches. So, and you can drill down. You can have global, Australia, Brazil, Canada, France, Germany, or India. I'm going to use global. The number one search topic, and it's not much of a surprise really, for 2015 was Paris under attack. Because, of course, Paris had two horrible attacks in 2015, both in January and then more recently in November. 897 million plus searches for that. The Rugby World Cup was big, not here in the U.S., but worldwide. I think, didn't the All Blacks take that one? I think so. Star Wars, an up-and-comer, 155 million plus searches so far. Cecil the Lion, 32 million searches. The Migrant Crisis, 23 million. Sports is big, so the Rugby World Cup, 246 million searches. The Women's World Cup in soccer, 113 million searches. Besting even even things like Star Wars. They have a great section, which is a farewell to the brightest stars. And this is kind of neat, remembering the legends we lost in 2015. And it's, you know, Oliver Sacks and Leonard Nimoy. And this is a really a great section if you want to go back in time. And they've got videos. Really nicely done. This is, I think this is, Google's done a good job of this. They do have a video you can watch, kind of combining it all. And, of course, they also do, wow, look at this one. The Oscars were very popular back in February. Besting the Rugby World Cup, the Women's World Cup, the China crisis, the Cricket World Cup, the Oscars, 406 million searches in 2015 for the 87th Academy Awards. So this you can find this at google.com/trends. And I think they've done a nice job. Facebook does the same thing. Twitter does the same thing. But after all, isn't Google kind of the internet's homepage? You know, it's funny. It's not the most used. Well, it is the most used, but it's not that by like a huge majority in the United States. It is in Europe. More than 80% of all searches in Europe are Google. In the U.S., it's a little more like 60% because of Bing, Microsoft's search engine, and other kind of lesser-known searches like DuckDuckGo. But still, I think if it's not on Google, it kind of doesn't exist in the internet, which is not necessarily a good thing. I don't think we'll miss 2015. Not a lot of highlights in that list, aren't there? This was the year in the Office of Personnel Management was hacked. So many places were hacked. You felt like our personal information is just, you know, why try to hide it? It's all out there. And now we find out that the Federal Aviation Administration is going to require people who buy drones to register them with their name, address, email, phone number. And they've admitted that that database will be publicly searchable. So anybody could just go in there, enter a drone registration number, and find your home address. So my suggestion, if you buy a drone, is don't use an office address or a P.O. box. Don't use too much personal information. Use your business phone. The drone registry will be publicly available. Hams have had to put up with this for a long time. If you're a ham radio operator, this is the way it tends to be government databases are. Ham radio operators have to put their personal information in there, and that's publicly searchable as well, by name even, which I don't think the drone registry will be. We were talking about Amazon and the great costs Amazon will go through. UPS is just struggling this holiday season to keep up with deliveries, as always. I mean, they add drivers. I feel bad for UPS drivers because they have a quota. I didn't realize this, but they have a quota, the number of packages they have to deliver in a day. They don't work by, you know, hours, 9 to 5. They have, you know, here's your 500 packages, get it done. And I learned that when my UPS driver pulled up about 8:30 or 9 at night and said, here's your package. I felt terrible. I said, what are you doing this? He said, well, I got to get them done. I could leave them for tomorrow, but then it'll be even worse. Got to get it done. Get her done. So be nice to your FedEx and UPS drivers this holiday season. They're doing a lot of work for Santa.
I feel like, you know, what's an appropriate tip?
Yeah. Give them, you know, pull off a fun or a fin or a sawbuck. I don't even know what those are anymore. Give them a sawbuck. I think that's fair. And you can decide what that is. Apparently Amazon, in order to cut its costs, is now starting to build. In fact, feel even more sorry for UPS drivers because they may be out of work in a couple of years. Amazon's trying to build its own delivery service. They're trying to start their own overnight air freight operation. Right now, Amazon uses UPS, a little FedEx, the Postal Service. It's another one. Amazon delivers on Sunday now, thanks to the U.S. Postal Service, which never delivered mail on Sunday. But apparently, you can rent them on Sunday so that you can, the little mail car will pull up in front of your house on Sundays, right? Amazon did about $100 billion in sales last year, and it's growing at the rate of 18%. I think it's going to grow even faster in the next few years as more and more people start to buy online, get comfortable with buying online, and love that, you know, Amazon Prime 2-day overnight two-day shipping. So they're looking at buying as many as 20 767 freighters, brand new ones, not even used ones, from Boeing. 20 of them. FedEx, Amazon, UPS, not commenting. U.S. Postal Service handled, according to Bernstein Research, 40% of Amazon's volume. That's 150 million items. UPS, 20 to 25%. FedEx, 15 to 20%. Wow. So be nice to your delivery person when they come to your door. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think carrots and cookies would be appropriate. I feel guilty because I'm ordering stuff that's not holiday gifts. I'm just buying stuff. Little money, honey. Some shekels, some clams, some ducats. A fin, a sawbuck, a little folding green. 888880, ask Leo. I love this. You know what? We should put this in the show notes. Thank you, Mike B., in our chat room. 50 slang terms for money. A fin is a 5, a sawbuck is a 10. I learned that from my dad. I think my dad called them sawbucks. Yeah. I think you slip your UPS guy a sawbuck. That's good. And you say, you know what I tell him? I say, here, this is for a warm drink after your day is done. Then. Have yourself an eggnog. Merry Christmas. I like to be a tough guy in my dreams. Hey, sweetheart, here's a sawbuck. Go out and buy yourself a dresh. At Goodwill or something. Hello there, the well-dressed, well-coiffed. She's once again wearing her antler tiaras. Is this a holiday tradition, Heather Hummel?
It is as of now.
I like it. The holiday.
I just bought this.
That's awesome.
In L.A. Is it showing up? Shows up better on the dark background.
Yeah, there you go. They look like it's a diamond tiara featuring antlers or mm-hmm. something.
Yeah, well.
Good look. It's a good look, especially for radio.
You slipped me a sawbuck.
I said, go out and buy yourself a tiara, sweetheart. it's nice to have you here, Heather. We missed you last weekend. I'm glad you were a little under the weather. Glad you're feeling better. This is that time of year.
No, that was the L.A. trip.
Oh, you went to L.A.?
Sorry, I had to correct you because
you weren't ill.
Such a good time.
Did you? What'd you do in L.A.?
Did you not see my pictures on Facebook?
Oh, not yet.
In a gown with a well-dressed gentleman real estate developer.
Nice.
Not that I'm leaving you.
Donald Trump?
Close.
So, this is something that bothers me about Facebook because you think, when you're looking at Facebook, you're seeing all the stuff that your friends are posting. I saw not a single post from you. And it's because Facebook doesn't put up everything. It just puts up, I don't know, there's some sort of magic algorithm it uses to figure out what to put up. And I guess it's based on what you like. I should like more of your pictures because I'm not seeing anything. So I'm going to go back and search for your name.
Go back in time.
The trick with Facebook, and you can only do it temporarily, is over when you're looking at the news feed. You can change the news feed from what it normally is, which is top stories. In other words, stuff I couldn't care less about, but Facebook thinks I should read, to most recent. And then it puts it in chronological order. And then you'll see everything, and you'll realize how much you're missing. Anyways, I'm sorry I missed your fancy pictures, but I'll go back in time and look for those.
You listening, Facebook?
Welcome back. You know, Facebook doesn't care. You think Facebook cares? They know that nobody's really paying attention. Their goal, and rightly so, is just that when you go to Facebook, you feel good. You say, oh, yeah, I enjoyed my visit, and I want to see more, so I'll be back. And that's another reason why they do this, because they want to give you new stuff every time you visit, because they want you coming back again and again. I can't say it's wrong. It's working. How many users now? 1.5 billion users, daily or monthly active users. 1.5 billion people visit Facebook at least once a month, and the majority of that every single day, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many times? You visit probably several times a day. I know I do.
Well, I'm probably different, but I find myself going less and less.
Yeah.
But there should be in the algorithm when there's lots of Christmas lights and girls in gowns that the photo
that should be automatic
to the top.
That should just go right to the top. No, I think that they will know. See, this is why they do all this. This is. They do this algorithmically. They will notice, oh, she's listening, visiting less, and they will tweak the automatically, not like a human is saying, oh, Heather's not visiting. We got to do something about this. But the computer will say, oh, and it'll do something until it gets more of your attention. They're very
smart.
Or Ryan
Gosling.
Yeah, they're very smart that way. But be aware, you're not seeing everything. You know, that's the problem because mom says, oh, honey, didn't you see my post? And you go, no. Well, you mustn't care anymore. Something like that. That's not what my mom sounds like, by the way.
Didn't
not what your mom sounds
like.
Cat
video.
Didn't you see that cat? Mom sent me, she's watching, so I'm going to be nice. Hi, Mom. And I love my mom. She sent me, she made felted Santas, little fuzzy Santas, and they're cavorting on her, in a centerpiece on her kitchen table. Isn't that cute? Little fuzzy Santas. I'll find that.
All right, I'm going to go look for
I'll
that.
I'll Facebook that.
Yeah, everyone loves Mrs. Laporte.
Mrs. Laporte's fuzzy Santas. So, you know what else I love? Calls. Because, frankly, otherwise the show would be pretty much this the whole time, and you don't want that. This is this is Leo's algorithm. Yeah, it's just going to be me chatting about stuff. No, no. You want the calls. So, Heather, you've been lining them up. I see a full board. Who should we talk to?
Let's talk to Nan in La Crescenta, California.
I love it. Hi, Nan.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Welcome.
Merry Antler Christmas to you.
Merry Antlers.
So I'm looking for a laptop that will process graphics pretty well.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly.
When you say process graphics, are you using Photoshop? What are you doing?
Photoshop and some video. I'd say probably 80% Photoshop, 20% video.
And what kind of video program are you using? Because different programs use different things. Like some programs will use the CPU, the main brain, and some will use the graphics processor, the GPU.
Well, I'll be using GPU. I don't have a software installed right now.
Okay, but
it's coming.
Yeah, Premiere and Final Cut will. So that's one thing to look into is, you know, what's more important for my particular video editing needs. But yeah, it sounds like you need a good GPU. And most laptops, to save space, battery life, heat, will use what the built-in graphics that are part of the CPU. Sometimes we call them motherboard graphics because there's no separate graphics card. What they usually are Intel's graphics. There's two levels. There's the Iris and the Iris Pro built into most modern Intel chips. It's not bad, but it's not as good as it could be if you have an NVIDIA chip in there. That's an additional dedicated graphics processor chip. So that's what you're going to look for.
That's what I've been looking at, and yeah. I've looked at some HPs, which seem to be in line with what I want, but I don't know price-wise if that's practical.
Well, that's the thing. You're going to pay more. These are higher-end laptops. You'll also get worse battery life. They may be bigger so they can dissipate the extra heat because, you know, remember, that's why they use motherboard graphics in the first place. And so
right.
you're looking for more of a, what they call sometimes a desktop replacement machine. Are you going to carry it around?
Not really, okay. No.
You also want lots of RAM. Somebody in the chat room is reminding me. Thank you, CCC. He says, don't forget RAM, and that's true. 16 gigs would be a good starting point. You could go to 30,
right.
32 if you can afford it. Again, this all comes down to the greenbacks, the loot, the moolah.
That's, exactly.
It's a price point.
Well, if the Rams come back to L.A., it might...
Play with it. It's never got a RAM. Hey, I don't like HP laptops, so I don't generally recommend them. You know, it's probably a bias more than an objective reality, but I feel like the HP loads them up with a lot of junkware. They've had heat overheating problems and others in the past. I generally, if you want the best laptops, I generally recommend Lenovo first, although I have to reconsider a little bit because Lenovo's been pulling some shenanigans on the consumer-grade laptops. And Dell, I like Dell a lot too. You're going to basically be looking for a 32 gigs of RAM NVIDIA laptop. And don't go by price, because the cheapest one's not necessarily the best. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And you're right. I mean, a desktop probably be more affordable, but I'm just going by what the caller asked for. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Choosing a laptop... that is a high-powered laptop really isn't that hard. Brand isn't maybe that important. You should definitely, to respond to our last caller, get a graphics card and lots of RAM, and certainly an SSD would help. Those solid-state drives are much faster than the old physical spinning drives. But again, all of this costs. And don't, you know, I think if you choose something like this and then you say, well, I want the cheapest one, you're going to get the cheapest one, which often is not the one you want. If it's for, you know, kind of professional work, spend some money. And chat room is saying, why don't you consider a desktop? Because a desktop will give you more bang for your buck and it'll be more expandable. People don't really buy desktop computers that much anymore, I don't think, though. Do they? I don't know. Seems like that's fading out. Robert, Charleston, South Carolina, is next. Hey, Robert, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, what's up?
What's up?
I just have to say off the top, the blah, blah, blah stuff. You're awesome. I love your network. I love all you're doing. I can't wait to get to the East Coast. I heard you mention something like that on that.
We have one of our contributors on our podcasts is a professor of journalism at CUNY, the City University of New York. Jeff Jarvis. Yeah.
Yes.
And he and his dean of the journalism school said, you know, we would really like for our students to have the ability to do kind of what you're doing so they could learn real journalism, you know, in the school. They could, in the old days, campus TV station, campus radio station. So they want a campus podcast network. So we're working with them to build a studio there in CUNY. They're on Times Square in New York City. And a studio that will be used to create a show that we'll show on our podcast network of kind of about New York startup scene. And then other stuff will be there. So it's kind of like a satellite. It'll be nice to have. Yeah, maybe sometimes I'll do the radio show from there. It'd be fun.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have you in the same time zone as me. That'd be cool.
That'd be fun.
real quick. So I got a Nexus 5 right now. And according to you and Jason Howell and all those guys, they seem to really like the Nexus 6P. So.
Well, the 5X and the 6P are the most recent versions of the Nexus.
Right. And I have the 5.
You have the you have a 2-year-old version of the Nexus. You know, they followed up with the 6, and now so yours. And the 5 was a classic. I mean, it really was.
I love it.
Yeah, great phone. I mean, the reason people buy Nexus phones, they're made not by Google, but under the auspices of Google. Your 5 is made by LG, for instance, and Google guarantees that they will be pure Android. By the way, there's debate over that. Some people like the things that Samsung or LG or other companies add to Android. It's true, some of those additions are nice. But most people, I think, feel like I want pure Android, and most importantly, I want it updated as fast as possible. And that's the guarantee of the Nexus, is that that Google will keep those up to date. So that's a good reason to get one. The Nexus 5 didn't have a great camera, didn't have great battery life. The 5X is comparable battery life. Not great, but okay, and a much better camera. And, of course, it's Marshmallow. Now, do you have Marshmallow yet on your Nexus 5? I bet you do.
I do. Yeah. I do. It's like 601, I think, got the other day.
That's the latest version.
That went up.
Yeah, and see, that's the beauty of that is for years to come, you're going to always be up to date as long as the version of Android works on your older phone. I think the Nexus 5 is a good phone. And it's a shame that we feel like we have to update these phones even after 2 years. Unlike a computer, 2 years is kind of the... you know, it's not merely obsolescence. They get beat up, I guess. Are you ready?
The quick reason why I'm getting rid of it is I'm not getting rid of it. I mean, I love it. It's hard. But it's still got a little value in it, so I can sell it.
Now's the time.
For a decent price.
Yeah, you're
right. And then I kind of jump onto the new boat with the new camera, with the updated RAM.
Smart.
So, but anyway, I'm asking you because I know that this came out. Google did an easy way to do this. But to jump from one device to the other is like a tap and go or like new kind of system to transfer everything over. Does that work? Do you know if that works with the two?
Absolutely. All of the phones with NFC, and that's all recent phones, you just tap the two phones together. And by the way, this works. Samsung, LG does this. I just got the BlackBerry Priv. It does it. You tap the two phones together. It doesn't copy everything. It's not like I'm going to make an exact copy of your phone, but it copies over enough of the Google information. You still have to enter your password and stuff, but it copies a lot of that information over in settings, Wi-Fi settings, things like that. But most of what you want on your phone, you're going to get from the Google Cloud. You know, if you have in settings, you know about the backup and reset area of settings. You can say, backup my phone and information about my phone to the Google Cloud. If you're doing that, once you log into your new Android phone, it will say, would you like me to restore your previous Android phone? And in my case, because I have many previous Android phones, it actually gives me a drop-down list and says, which one do you want to restore? And you can say, no, set this up as a new phone, or, yeah, make it as close as you can to the, you know, the last phone I used, your Nexus 5, and it will download all the apps. It takes a couple of hours on a fast Wi-Fi connection because it has to download all the apps. In some cases, I think the tap will copy over pictures, which would be nice, wouldn't it? You know, photos from your old phone.
Sure.
But in most cases, I don't care because, for instance, I use Google Photos. So all my photos are already in the cloud. You know, if you're using all those Google Cloud services, you're kind of already backed up as it is.
Yeah, I've already kind of surrendered to my overlords.
It's best. So, it's the best. Just relax.
It is. It's awesome. I love it. It's
relax.
Great. They take care of all the brain stuff.
Let go and let Google is my
absolutely.
Motto.
Absolutely. One more quick thing, if I could. The Fi service, I noticed, I bought this phone on the Fi service because I got $50 credit on it.
You'll have to get a new SIM, and they will give you a new SIM.
Yeah, they get that.
Yep.
Yep.
And it works
great. How you like it?
I love the Fi service. It's cheap. So
yes,
this is
Google. Yeah, for 2 gigs.
What Google's doing is they're taking, they're doing what's called an MVNO, Mobile Virtual Network Operator. That means reselling, basically. But in this case, they're doing something odd. They're reselling both Sprint and T-Mobile. It'll pick whichever is best in your area, so you get kind of better coverage. And they're charging $20, a flat fee for unlimited voice and text, and then $10 a gigabyte for additional data, and whatever amount you use. You only pay as you go. And I think that's the best plan out there. My phone bill on Google Fi is like $30 a month usually. It's not very much.
So if you use over so you can request, hey, at the beginning of the month, I think I'm going to use 2 gigs.
It doesn't matter.
If you go over that, you go stepwise, right? It's like they only charge
it's
you.
And it's fractional. So what you tell them ahead of time is really just for the first bill. They'll bill you for whatever you say you're going to use. And then if you use more or less, from now on, your bill will reflect that. So it's only for the first one it even matters what you say. Because from then on, they only bill you as you go. And they do it fractionally. I don't know how small the fraction is, but it's like 100 kilobytes or something. So if you use 1.3 gigs next month, you'll pay $13.
Do I need to call T-Mobile after Fi picks me up and then say, hey, I'm going to cancel my plan at T-Mobile so I'm not paying 2 bills?
Oh, yeah. If you have a T-Mobile account, you want to cancel it, yeah.
Okay, so they will automatically cancel. When that phone number transfers over, T-Mobile will not.
No, they won't automatically. You have to cancel it. Cancel your old plan. Replace it with Fi. The nice thing – well, there's pros and cons. So with T-Mobile, which is really nice, you get free international data. It's slow, 2G speed, but you get it. And so T-Mobile is great for people who travel. But what you don't get, that T-Mobile does, is unlimited data from those music and video services. You know, the T-Mobile binge on thing that they do where you can watch Netflix and it doesn't count against your cap. Fi does not do that. So you'll have to pay as you go for data that you use, even on Spotify and Netflix, things like that. That's one big difference. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, as with any carrier, Fi is required to allow you to port your number in and out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Brian in Moments, Illinois is next. Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Yes, and I hope you have all your presents bought.
I do not. I do not. I like to reserve just a few people who, you know, go giftless until Christmas Eve when I, in a hurry... You know, there's a store in Petaluma, which is the little town we live in, but I think they're doing it all over the country, that is doing Christmas Eve drive-up gifts. You can go online. I think Target's doing it, among others. And you can order online and then drive by on Christmas Eve and say, give me that present. And I plan on doing that. As a good father, that's what I do every year. It's a male thing. You just wouldn't understand.
Well, I got my gift spot, and then I started buying some stuff for myself.
Yes, that's what you should do.
I've been buying stuff so I could do some podcasting and maybe some voiceover work.
Oh, good.
And that's part of what the questions are about.
Okay.
All right, so I have the Heil PR40 and the Presonus Audio Box i2.
Nice.
So I could get
Nice. So the Heil PR 40 is a microphone. It's the one I use and I particularly like, and I discovered it when it was the award for a podcast of the year in the very first or second podcast expo. And they gave me this beautiful microphone in a wooden box. And I said, wow, thank you. And I said, I'll try it. And I was blown away. And so I use it and I love it. Letterman used to have it on his desk. It's well known among hams because Bob Heil is a very famous ham. But I don't think it's well known on radio. It's too inexpensive for radio stations. It's only $350. And radio stations just really want to spend $1,200 on a very expensive but not nearly as good microphone. So good choice there. The Presonus, as you know, but I'll explain to our audience, is what allows you to use a professional broadcast style mic with your computer. It turns the electrical signal coming out of the microphone into bits, so you can plug it into the USB port. So your Presonus is allowing you to use that mic right into your computer, which is great.
Yes. And so I was wondering about what software would you recommend to record a podcast, especially one that possibly could have someone call in and speak with me.
Yeah, so you're going to use probably Skype. And it's funny because I started doing these podcasts because of Skype. Back in 2005, I wanted to do – this is when podcasting was new in 2004. And I wanted to do podcasts. So our first podcast was just the radio show. I would just take it and put it out on the internet as a podcast. But I wanted to do podcasts with my friends, but they were distributed all over the country. And I thought, I just don't know how to do that. So I didn't do it until somebody called this radio show in early 2005 on Skype, and the quality was amazing. And I said, wow, what's going on here? See, what I didn't know at the time, but I found out later, is that the telephone network is intentionally bad. It's because in the earliest days when AT&T was trying to figure out how much quality to put down the line, they said, what is the lowest quality we can use that it will still be intelligible? And they did that. It's effectively something like 4 or 6 bit audio. It's very low. It wasn't digital at the time. It was analog, but it was very low quality. And what's interesting is we've become so used to the scratchy sounds of telephone calls that no one's ever improved it, even though nowadays you could easily make it much better. In fact, sometimes if you have Wi-Fi calling or a friend has Wi-Fi calling on their phone, they'll call you and they'll sound so clear, and it's like, what's going on? Why do you sound so good? And it's because the telephone network is using a higher quality bit rate. Skype does that. And so Skype sounds so much better than a phone call. You could use phone calls, but it's so much better with Skype, just Skype audio. So the problem, though, is when you're running Skype on a computer, on a PC, it's hard to record both ends of the Skype call. You can get your voice, but not the call, or you can get the call, but not your voice. And you really want both for the podcast, don't you? So there are programs that will do that. On the Windows side, Pamela is one I used for a long time. That was the idea, was you could record the entire audio, everything that's going on. And that's nice. Then you'll get an audio, nice little audio. You want to do an audio podcast, I presume, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. That makes it very easy. So get Pamela. It's not expensive. You can edit with their Audacity is free, open source. It's crashy. I used it for a little while and I decided not to keep using it because if it crashes once in the middle of a long edit, you feel angered. And you don't want something that's not going to be reliable. So I end up using on the Mac Amadeus Pro, which is an excellent, inexpensive shareware program on the Mac. On Windows, there's Adobe Audition, which is the king of the hill, and I use that on Windows, but that's a little more expensive. But that's an awesome program. And between the two of them, the reason you want a good editing program is you can clean up bad sound. If there's hiss, in the background of your call, for instance, because it's the telephone network, there's a little... and you'd like to clean that up. And a good audio editing program will let you do some of that. I also like to compress the audio after I've done the edit. Compressing means reducing what they call the dynamic range, the loudest louds and the lowest lows, to get them in kind of in one place. Radio stations do that. Your radio station is doing it right now with my voice. And it makes it more clear. People who are used to listening to radio will appreciate it. And if you're listening in the car to a podcast, a little bit, or even a lot of compression makes a big difference in terms of intelligibility. So look, go out and get Pamela. There are other programs as well that will allow you to record Skype audio and your voice, put them together. And then I would record it or edit it with Adobe Audition if you can afford it. If you can't, Audacity is free on all platforms. And if you're on the Mac, I really like Amadeus Pro. It's a good choice. And that's all you really need to make a podcast. It's that's what's great about them. It's a totally democratized medium. When I first started in radio, I had to beg, and I mean literally beg, a radio station to hire me because, you know, I remember him saying, "Well, Laporte, you're a diamond in the rough, but we think we can maybe use you," as it turned out, midnight to 5 a.m. Sunday morning. "Maybe we could use you for minimum wage, and you can we can polish you up." But I really wanted to do it. And so, you know, that's the problem with traditional media. There's a gatekeeper. It costs a lot of money to put a radio station on the air. And so the gatekeeper is typically somebody who has the money to buy a license and put up a transmitter and do all of that. Same thing with TV. Same thing, frankly, with music and books. Until very recently, that was all controlled by big money. And nowadays, because of the internet, media has been completely democratized. Anybody can make a YouTube video, distribute it for free. Same with a podcast. It's easy. So everybody has a chance to have a voice. The problem with that, of course, is that everybody has a voice. You don't have a handful of voices in each city getting to talk. But if you do great work, you build your community, you're passionate about what you do, you consider the interests and the time and the attention, you know, you're grateful for the attention of your audience and you use their attention well, you can absolutely succeed. I wouldn't count on making a living, although, again, I think that's an option as well. But it's going to take a lot of work. It's worth it. It's so much fun. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. Oh, good. It's snack time. Where's my nature box? Bring me a nature box. We love nature box snacks. You've heard me talk about them before. Nature box, of course, makes snacking delicious. Oh, this is good. 50% off your first box. Mmm, and such great treats. So the idea is nature box delivered. You get this box every month. Or if you're greedy like us, you get several boxes every month. There's no limit. And inside it are wonderful snacks selected from their 100-plus snacks. It's dedicated to making smart, delicious snacking easy. Part food brand, part data-driven tech company. NatureBox's proprietary algorithm will help you find your next snack sensation. You tell them what you like. Go to the website, naturebox.com/twit. You can choose sweet, spicy, vegan, non-GMO. And then their algorithm will give you personalized recommendations. And you say, yeah, I like that. There's over 100. Things like spicy sriracha popcorn, cinnamon spiced almonds. This is what NatureBox picked for us. Whole wheat chocolate chip cookie bites. These are amazing. My mouth is watering already. Sweet kettle crunch, kettle peanuts with popcorn kernels. The thing is, all of these are nutritionist approved, made from real ingredients without any high fructose corn syrup, without any artificial colors or flavors. They're incredible. This contains what? Peanuts, whole corn, sugar, butter, soybean oil, and salt, sea salt. That's it. They're very simple. Ooh, I like the coffee kettle popcorn. Kettle corn with coffee caramelized popcorn. Watermelon mini stars. You'll be happy to give these to your kids, you know. They'll think these are candy, these fruit chews, but they are apple puree, concentrated apple puree, apple juice, natural flavor, pectin, black carrot juice, concentrate for color, and citrus fiber. That's it. Keep these away from me. Italian bistro pretzels, garlic and parmesan cheese flavored pretzel bites, baby. Nature Box. There's zero. Oh, and my favorite, the pineapple rings, the best dried pineapple you've ever had. And what's in it? Pineapple. That's all. Zero chance of getting bored. They release new flavors every month. Nature Box, obsessed with delivering snacks that contain the bold, innovative flavors you crave and ingredients you can trust. Unbox a world of taste and possibility. Visit naturebox.com/twit. You'll get your first box for 50% off. That's nice. That's a good deal. Nature, this is a new offer, so take advantage of it. Naturebox.com/twit. 50% off your first box of Beyond Tasty hand-picked snacks sent direct to your doorstep. And by the way, this would be a great holiday gift for somebody. A college kid. You know, you send them a food care kit, right? Care package, right? Let NatureBox do it every month. They will love you. In fact, that's a good idea. I just realized what I'm going to give Abby for Christmas. NatureBox.com/twit. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And the lines are open. We have unusually a number of free lines. You think people are busy? You know, they're probably out shopping. They're listening in the car, but they can't call in. 88, if you're home and you got a moment, this would be a good time to call if you've had a hard time getting in before. 8888 Ask Leo. I don't usually have to beg. I usually don't. The phone lines are almost always jammed, so this would be a good time to call. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Bruce is on the line from Riverside, California. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Leo. Love your show.
Thank
you. Been watching you since Tech TV days.
You know, it's getting receding rapidly in the rearview mirror. 1998 yes. to 2004, 11 years ago, we wrapped things up. It's amazing. Actually, almost 12. It'll be 12 years in April. Wow.
Okay. Well, I'm having a problem with texting, group texts. And this thing, 17th of November, I just looked up the dates.
Yeah.
I sent out a group text, and I got responses from everybody.
Yeah.
The 23rd of last month, I sent out the text 4 times and got no response.
Oh, that's bad. Now, who's your carrier?
Verizon.
Oh, my wife has Verizon. Lots of her texts don't arrive. worst case, sometimes, actually this is better than the worst case. Worst case, they never arrive. But often, they'll arrive a day later. Drives me nuts. And it's something about Verizon's gateway to other... other carriers, I think. What kind of phone are you using?
Note 4.
Okay. And are any of your friends on iPhones?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So one of the things I thought, but this is not what I thought it was, if you start a group text on an iPhone using Apple's messages, only other people on iPhones will be able to participate. People who are on Android phones will be left out. They'll be the famous green bubbles in the messages thread. And this is actually Apple's fault, but I don't think that's what's happening to you because you're starting the group messaging fresh on your Android device, right?
I did some research and I saw that, you know, start the group message. So I started a separate one to other people with iOS devices and got no response.
Yeah, I'm wondering. So Apple's messages was Apple's idea of kind of supplementing, although ultimately supplanting, the carrier SMS system. The SMS system has been very expensive in the past, and carriers really overcharge for it. Nowadays, most people have unlimited text messages in their plan, so you don't see the cost. It shouldn't cost much, but it isn't data. It's not done over the internet. You know, your phone, most smartphones have cell service, voice service, and they have data service. SMS doesn't go over the data service. SMS basically goes over the voice service. It comes from a time predating smartphones, right? And for that reason, carriers really could charge exorbitantly for it. What's the response was, of course, for companies to appear like WhatsApp. One of the reasons WhatsApp's so big is to get around expensive SMS plans. In the United States, it's less of an issue, but it was a huge issue internationally. And that's kind of what Apple was thinking. You know what? When Apple really could do anything they wanted. The carriers were just stuck with it. If you want an iPhone, AT&T, you better just put up with what we do. They created messages to use data between iPhones and only to use the voice SMS system when talking to non-iPhones. That did not turn out such a good plan. Because lots of messages get dropped. There are capabilities that Apple's messages have that only work with iPhones, like group messaging. And the reason it's a problem is because most iPhone users don't understand they're not using SMS. When they use Apple Messages, often they're not using the voice system. They're using the data system. Because there is no alternative on Apple to use the carrier SMS only. That's what you want. So I think it's related to this, but it may also be related to Verizon's gateway issues. In the early days of SMS, you could only SMS somebody in the same phone system, you know, singular to singular, Verizon to Verizon, Sprint to Sprint. It was only in the last decade or so that you've been able to go cross systems, and those use gateways, and sometimes those gateways are not great. So it could be one or the other of those things. The best solution, and it's hard because you have to convince everybody to use it, is to go to a data-only plan, a data-only system like WhatsApp. There are many of these messenger systems. Facebook Messenger, that might be the easiest to convince people to go to because I bet you all your friends are on Facebook. In fact, the next group message you start, maybe start it on Facebook Messenger and see what happens. Because these don't use the phone system at all. It's data. Has the advantage for that reason of you can also use it on a tablet or a PC that don't have SMS connections, right? I use Telegram. That's another great one. But Facebook's Messenger would probably be the most likely to be acceptable to all of your friends and family because almost everybody's on Facebook. That's the problem with using WhatsApp, which is also Facebook or Facebook Messenger or Telegram or Secret or Signal. There are a million of these. Is that everybody has to agree to use the same system. The problem is that Apple Messages is kind of hybrid. It's kind of like that. But Apple doesn't really, you know, let you know that. You think you're using SMS when you're not. You're using kind of a hybrid of SMS and data-based messaging. Google Hangouts is another good one. And Google does the same thing, by the way, with Hangouts. Hangouts, you can use both text messaging or data messaging with Google's Hangouts. It works on iPhones and on Android devices. The problem is anybody on an iPhone will have to download Hangouts. That doesn't come with an iPhone. You'd really like something that everybody has. And your best bet is Facebook Messenger. This is, by the way, the beginning of a great war because the next big platform is messaging. There's no doubt about it. And all we have to do is look to China at a program called WeChat. WeChat is used almost universally in China. Almost everybody has WeChat on their phone. And they use it not just for messaging, but for a whole lot more. They use it as an Instagram analog. You can post pictures publicly. You can have a blog on WeChat. You can order tickets, train tickets, airplane tickets. You can get your laundry done. WeChat does everything. And it's an amazing platform. And all the software companies are looking at this going, it's one of the reasons Facebook paid more than $1 billion for WhatsApp because they realized that WhatsApp was so huge internationally. They realized this is one big area of growth. And I think what Facebook's plan is to make Messenger an all-in-one solution for people. They added recently, and they're testing it right now, a personal assistant program on Facebook Messenger called M. They've added the ability to pay. This is a big one internationally, to send payments via Messenger. So you don't have to have somebody's bank account. You don't have to. All you need is their phone number, and you can send them money. In areas of the developing world where bank accounts aren't common, companies that are doing this, like M-Pesa in Africa, are hugely valuable. They're doing immense business. India too, China too. And I think the most tech companies in the U.S. are looking at this saying, yeah, we want to get in on this new thing. So watch. Google kind of had an opportunity with Hangouts and seems to have, as often is the case with Google, fallen asleep at the switch. Believe me, Apple, Facebook, and others are going to work hard to get you to use their messaging product and for more than just messages. You know, right now, stickers, emojis, they're a great way to communicate. Apple and others allow you to send audio as well as text. I love that. Apple's been pushing that in its ads because if it's a complicated thing and you don't want to type it out, maybe you don't know how to spell a word, but you know how to pronounce it, audio messaging is fantastic. Apple makes that very easy. So I guess the best answer for this is to not rely on Verizon's SMS system with your friends, but to get them to use something in common. Messenger, probably the easiest. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. The website, I write everything down. We make sure you have all the stuff I talk about available to you, is techguylabs.com. And it's a kind of a sketch at first. James Ruvo writes it down as we're going, so you have at least somewhere to look during the show. But after the show, more and more is put there, including audio and video from the show. And, of course, your comments are always a big part of it. That's free. There's no sign up. I don't have a newsletter. I know I'm a slacker. There's nothing to sign up for. I don't want your email address. Just go there and use it. TechGuyLabs.com. Ken is in the Fillmore, California. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Leo. How you doing? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Thank you.
First, let me ask you a question so I get my terminology right. When you go to one of those big copy centers and you have something made on a machine that's fast with a toner and it's kind of glossy and it gets hot, what is that, laser print?
Yeah, I think so. The glossy thing, maybe not. They may have a higher quality dye, what they call a dye sub printer. The stuff that really looks good uses other technologies if it's really shiny. So I'm not sure. Is it for photo printing or for brochures and that kind of thing?
Well, what I'm doing is making a product, which is a kit that goes inside a model train. You know, picture like a dollhouse.
Oh, neat.
And you want to put wallpaper inside.
Yeah.
I'm printing wallpaper that goes inside a train that looks like the conductor button, the air conditioner switches, you know, all the little details.
What a good idea. So it really looks realistic inside. How do they get it in there? Can you take the top off a car and...
Yeah, you take the top off, and then you can fold it up and then stick it in there with some tweezers, and it just fits into the already manufactured cars.
So you want it to be cardboard or stiff, right? A stiff back?
Well, not too stiff. I found that, like, I think it's 4.5 thousandths thick. Okay. It's like the Epson printer I use in my Epson.
Yeah.
It's a thinner paper because you want to – it needs to fold.
Yeah, I understand.
In the corner.
Yeah.
So I've been prototyping these on my Epson printers, which I love, at the fullest resolution. On the matte paper, it's not photo gloss and it's not cardstock. It's just a good photo quality inkjet paper, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And the tones and the colors and the details are beautifully smooth. And, you know, I photographed it through the window. Then I go to... a big copier center and have them run off on a Xerox 550. And I look at it with a magnifier like you would be looking through the window of this train.
Yeah.
And you can really see all the big dots of that thing.
Right.
Is there some way I can get inkjet to print faster or cheaper, or is there some other...
In other words, you're doing a better job at home than they're doing at the copy shop.
Yes, but it's slower and more expensive.
Might want to go to a print shop instead of a copy shop. Because what the copy shop is using is obviously a low-res laser printer. And so it's just not as good. There are better printers out there. A lot of times for continuous color and so forth, they use something called a dye sub printer. Those are a lot more expensive. Dye sublimation uses thicker inks. And it is a more expensive print job. There are all sorts of ways to do it. And I don't know exactly what your copy shop is using, but obviously... That's not the right technology. It's probably a little out of date. These things are expensive. They may not keep up, with the latest technology.
I've compared. I went to several different copy shops, and I found Canon ones in the smaller print shops. They don't keep them aligned properly.
Yeah.
So when you look at them, blacks have little edgy color.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the other copier center I use, I won't say the name. I could, but I don't know if that's okay.
Yeah, you can say the name. It's a chain, obviously.
I go to Staples because if one of their machines is down, I can always go to another Staples.
Right.
Although they're not all color the same. And a Xerox 550, and from all of the major copiers that I've looked at, it seems like the the 550 has been the sharpest, but it still has those dots, and they say they can't print it at a higher resolution or they're not allowed to get inside and mess with it.
Well, it may not be capable of the higher resolution. Obviously, your inkjet is higher resolution. And
yes.
that's what's happened is that consumer inkjet technology has progressed very, very quickly, but copy shops don't buy new printers every year. And so it sounds like they're using a lower res printer. You want a higher, I would guess at least 300 DPI, 600 DPI be best.
My files are 600.
Yeah. So you'd want 600 DPI. That's the other issue, by the way. You should find out what the native resolution of the printer is and bring them files of that resolution, because if they're down-resing or up-resing, in other words, if they're modifying the files, that can also introduce errors that may be visible, artifacts.
Even down-resing?
Yeah. I would do that in your computer, because you're going to do a better job getting it to the resolution. But you find out what their native resolution is. I bet you it's – if you want it to look 600, and it's probably 300 or less.
Yeah,
and if that's the case, yeah, that you're not gonna. It'd be better for you to do get the down resing than for them to do the down resing. I don't know. Let's ask the chat room. I'm sure there's somebody listening right now who's done this kind of things. I don't know if you go to a print shop and use offset printing. I don't know if you want to go. Die sub probably is too expensive and probably not necessary. You shouldn't be able to see the dots. Can you see them with the naked eye?
No.
You have, no, but with a magnifying glass, you can.
Yeah, when you put it in the train and you want to look at it, yes, you can see them.
So what you're doing is you're printing at 600 DPI because that's the resolution, and it's no problem for the inkjet to do that, and that's the resolution of your original. When you bring it to the shop, they're down resing it to 300, and that's why you can see it with a magnifying glass. And you shouldn't be able to see 300 with the naked eye unless you're nearsighted and you can get really close to it.
Yeah.
It seems like there'd be a better way to do this.
I hear you advertise the Epson workforce printer.
Those are good, and they're fast. Yeah. They're really fast. We're talking two or three page per minute. No, that's faster than that. Two or three pages per second. No, two or three seconds per page. Let me get this right. on the fastest Epson Workforce. And by the way, they are a sponsor. So just a little disclaimer there. But I have one, and you can get it very fast. And they do have a variety of resolutions and so forth. Their precision color technology is made for the bigger industrial printers, and it is a very high resolution at very high speed. And that's, I think, the thing you're seeing. Are the colors adequate for you on the print shop when you go to the copy shop?
No, I have to do a whole lot of adjustment because usually they're oversaturated and real delicate tans and peaches suddenly go to the red or orange.
You might look at a photo printer, too, because photo printing is going to be glossy and look better than...
I don't necessarily want glossy. Some of the interiors are like of real trains.
Yeah.
Something
in the chat room is suggesting Kinko's. Maybe going to a different, not Staples, but a different, more dedicated place to give you some more choices, at least. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So for Curtis B. saying offset would do well for you, but it's best for our large runs, obviously, because I have to set the printer up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and Chris Marquardt's here. He's the photo guy. He's also the devil. He talked me into buying a film camera, but you know what? I went to the place you recommended in Austria, Leicashop.com. And
are you happy?
Really happy, because I got an old Leica M3. This camera is 60 years old. It's older than me. Film camera, and they said it was B+ condition, and I can't find a thing wrong with it. I would say this is pristine. It's just beautiful. So I was very happy.
I told you they over-delivered. Yep.
They over-delivered. It's just a stunning camera. In fact, I liked it so much, I went back and I got a Rolleiflex from them. So you are the devil. But you know what's interesting, and this is what you've always said, is that nobody wants film cameras anymore. So these Leicas were traditionally, you know, no one could afford these. These were crazy expensive cameras when they came out in 1955, this one. But now they're just a few hundred dollars. And the Rolleis, same thing, because they're antiques. And no one wants film cameras. So there's a, you know, there's a collector's market. You got to be careful. You don't want to get a, you know, sometimes a special serial number or a special paint job will cost $20,000.
Oh, they can go really expensive. Yeah. They can go very expensive.
But if you, and I'm glad to go instead of eBay. I was nervous about eBay because you just don't know what you're going to get. But if you're going to somebody that does this professionally, and Leica Shop is like, they sell antique cameras. That's what they do. They're going to do a good job, I think. And I didn't have to pay duties or anything. It was they shipped it free. It's very and fast. I was very happy.
That is cool.
So I have shot my first roll, but I haven't seen its results yet.
What film did you shoot?
I went with black and white Kodak Tri-X.
Good old Tri-X.
Now, I had a question because they make professional film, and then I guess the rest is consumer. Is there a difference? They call it professional Tri-X.
Yeah, the Tri-X is one of their professional line, but I'm not sure there's a real distinction.
Yeah.
I mean, the consumer films are usually the color films. The professional films might be a bit more. Have to be a bit more precise to work with them. But that's what I want to talk about today, because you have a camera that doesn't have a built-in light meter.
No.
And I wanted to
so
talk
I'm just
about
guessing.
Metering.
I'm just guessing.
That's but you won't have to from now on. Okay.
Oh, good.
So. First of all, of course, we live in 2015, so we have smartphones and there are smartphone apps that can light meter for you. And there are several of them. The one that I use is called Pocket Light Meter. And that's available for iOS and Android. And that lets you choose two of the three parameters that are important for your metering. And then you just point the camera and it gives you the third. So let's look at those. There's ISO, there's the aperture, there's the shutter speed. Those three determine your exposure. And in Pocket Light Meter, you would set the ISO to whatever ISO the film is that you have in the camera. You'd set the, let's say, aperture to whatever you need for that kind of a picture.
Let me interrupt and say ISO, it used to be ASA, is the sensitivity to light, right?
Exactly.
So the higher the number, the more sensitive to light. And on your digital camera, really, when you set a higher ISO, you're just turning up amplification.
Pretty much, yeah.
You're amplifying the light, but they've got the corresponding numbers, even though the technique is different. So
they're pretty much exactly the same. So you will set up. Let's say you have a Tri-X in there, which is an ISO 400 film. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you set that up. You set up your light meter app to use that ISO.
Yeah.
Then you set up your. You set up an aperture. You set the app to an aperture. And then you just point the camera to where you want to expose, and it will give you the shutter speed that you have to set in your camera.
So clever.
Pretty much you lock down two parameters, and it'll give you the third one. And again, there are a multitude of these applications
out
there.
But you like Pocket Light Meter. I didn't find that on Android, but you say it's on Android. I know I have it on
iOS.
Okay.
I think it's on Android. Well, there are plenty of
I have this one's free. It's called B-Cam Light Meter, and it's got an ad in it, so that's why it's free.
I'm pretty sure it'll do the job.
I found a really cute one that actually looks like one of those old 50s light meters.
Right. One way to expose, but of course, you know, you have to like kind of get this phone out and start the app and dial in the settings, and that's kind of
a pain in the butt.
Kind of a bit of a pain. Yeah. So there's one thing I think we talked about this at least a year ago, but I think this is the right point to bring it back up. It's called the Sunny 16. It's a kind of a rule of thumb that you can use to get the exposure right. And what you do is you don't need any tools. You just need to know a little equation. Set the shutter speed of the camera to 1 divided by the ISO of the film.
Okay, so...
So you have an ISO 400 film in there.
Yeah, so 1
you
400th,
set it to
or
the closest one.
Yeah.
I think on the Leica, do you get a 400?
You know what's nice about the Leica? This shutter speed is continuous, so you can put it anywhere. So I'm going to set it in between 250 and 500, roughly.
That's perfectly fine. 500 will do as well.
Okay.
So 1 divided by the ISO, that's your shutter speed.
Yep.
And now, on a really sunny day, set the aperture to f/16.
That's all the way narrowed down.
Well, on that lens, it is. Some of the lenses might go further
yeah.
down.
Yeah.
If it's slightly overcast, go to F11.
11 is overcast. Okay, good. Okay.
If it's overcast, like really overcast, F8.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And by the way, I've there's a very good Wikipedia page on that. The way to judge how bright the light is by looking at the shadow that you cast on the floor. So with a really sunny day, you have really distinct shadows. You can see a hard edge around your shadow. If you have a slightly overcast day, an F11 day, the shadow will have some softer edges. On an overcast day, that's an F8 light situation, you have shadows just barely visible. And then a heavy overcast, that's an F5.6, no shadows whatsoever. So as long as you keep in mind that all you have to do is set the shutter speed to 1 divided by the ISO of the film, and then sunny F16, slightly overcast F11, overcast F8.
That's pretty easy.
Heavy overcast F5.6. That's all you need to know, and that's really do it once, and you'll be just fine. And here's another trick. Put a color negative film in there. One of those Fuji Superior, whatever.
Kodak Portra, it's called. Portra.
Perfectly fine.
Okay.
Color negative film is so flexible that you can even be off by 1 or 2 f-stops in your exposure, and it'll be just fine.
Oh, I thought black and white was more more
color negative. Color's is even pretty better. much has the biggest latitude. Okay. So you can be +/-2 and you'll still get a good result.
Now, we're not, you and I, as film shooters, are not setting up the best, what is it, the best Spessler enlarger.
Or the enlarger.
Fix. We're just sending it out to a processor. Actually, this is a good way to support the local camera store in your town, because most of them will do it. I just checked with the one around the corner, the little Shutterbug around the corner. I said, you do 120 film? He said, oh, yeah. Do you do 35 million? He said, oh, yeah. Bring it over there. Help keep them in business, because you want to keep them
very
in business.
Cool.
And they'll give you, he says, we give you a prints and a CD. You get the digital as well as the print version. So
right.
And then
make sure you get a good resolution on the scans though.
Yeah, highest you can get, right?
You'll have to tell them. Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a lot of detail in film.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think this is kind of a hipster thing. I don't think any normal person should do this. By the way,
I'll call you hipster as soon as you have a typewriter on your desk.
Typewriter's next.
Yep.
But you know what it does? It first of all, it makes you grateful for digital, because I've shot 30 images and I haven't seen them. You can't look on the back of the camera. You have no idea what you're getting. And it's not cheap. Every image is, 50 to 80 cents per image by the time you add up the film and the processing and the print. So you're spending some money. And so every image is, you think about every image.
It counts. Yep.
Yeah. And of course the good news is I'm not going to take as many dopey images. I've had this camera for more than a week and I've only taken 29 pictures.
It's kind of hard to fill up a roll of film.
It's hard, yeah. And I want to, especially my first roll, I want to see, how much latitude do I have? How well am I doing? Chris Marquardt, I love him. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com to find out more. So, it didn't even take me one roll to say, I want medium format. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, ran out of time, so I didn't get to say. Chris Marquardt does photo workshops, including a film workshop at discoverthetopfloor.com. And our assignment for today, for the month, is windy. So if you participate in our assignments, it's fun. It's just an excuse, really, to go out and take pictures. Go out and see if you can illustrate the word, the concept, the idea. Windy. You can upload the pictures to Flickr.com. That's free. If you're not a member, you should join. Great photographic community. And then we have a tech guy group in there. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will welcome you and accept your submissions. Make sure you tag the photo with the word windy. And then Chris will pick three photos he likes, and we'll talk about them in a couple of weeks. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Kathleen is next in Los Angeles. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi there, Leo.
Thank you for calling.
Yes, I need your help today.
Oh, okay.
I am looking to purchase a laptop for my daughter, and she's always had Macs. but in her, she works in hospital management. So she's having trouble getting the company's access on her Mac.
They want her to use a Windows PC.
Correct.
Yeah.
And obviously we've been using Macs forever, so really have no idea which direction to go as far as a brand.
Yeah, it's a shame. The Mac really is a better laptop, in my opinion. But there are good choices out there. If she wants to go kind of try this new, the one thing that Apple doesn't do is touch screens. And and I think there is a lot to be said for a touch screen computer, a laptop computer. So if she wants to kind of experiment with that, she should look at a Windows 10 machine. Microsoft makes a very good one. The Surface Pro 4 is a tablet with a attachable keyboard, very light, portable, easy to use, touch screen, excellent Windows computer. So that would be a good choice. If she wants a more traditional laptop, my current favorite that is at a reasonable price. Microsoft makes one called the Surface Book that I love, but it's ridiculously priced, is the Dell XPS 13. They've just updated that. It's small, lightweight. You can choose a touchscreen or not, and I think it's an excellent Windows notebook. It's my kind of go-to notebook. It's a workhorse, and I think she'll like it a lot. It's also beautiful. And, you know, it's as close as you can get to a MacBook Air.
Oh, the Dell is?
Yeah. Surprisingly, it is. In fact, in some ways, I like it a little bit better because it has the screen goes edge to edge. There's very little bezel, so it's a really beautiful high res screen. Now she's going to have to use Windows, and if she's used to a Mac and you're used to a Mac, that's not so easy. You have to get used to buttons in different places, control panel versus system preferences, things that are just kind of seem arbitrary differences, and they are.
Right.
But a computer is a computer, and they all do roughly the same thing. She'll be at home with it pretty quickly.
Right. Wanting to be in about the $1,500 price range is...
Oh, easy. I love talking to Mac people because they're expecting to spend a lot of money. It will be well below that because it's a PC. They're much less expensive. So you can easily spend get a great PC laptop for $1,000.
Okay. So you think the Dell as opposed to HP Spectrum?
Don't get an HP.
Okay.
Do me a
Thank
favor.
You.
You might want to go to the Microsoft store. I think there's one in your area and look at they have all the best ones. They have the Dells, they have of course their own the Surfaces. See how she feels. If she wants a notebook, traditional notebook, the Dell's great. If she's willing to kind of look at the idea of a convertible, that is a notebook that can be a tablet, then I think the Surface Pro is really good.
Okay. And then what is the differences in like the Office packages? There's like a Pro and a personal.
The difference is in the programs it comes with. She probably doesn't need, the business one. She could probably get Office 365 Home, which is about $8 a month. It includes Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and Outlook. I think that's probably all she needs. I mean, the others include a database program, Access, and other features that are designed for business. She should, there probably is an IT guy at the hospital. She could ask, what software do I need to use?
Okay, that's a great idea.
Who could point her in the right direction. The other option, I shouldn't ignore this, is you can run Windows on a Mac. You know that, right?
Yes, I know that. She's tried using it on her current Mac, and it just runs so slow. But her current Mac we bought it in 2011.
You could buy a new MacBook Pro and use Boot Camp to put Windows on a second partition. Then it's not going to run slow. It's going to run full speed because there's no Mac running. It's all Windows. So she could boot into Windows. If she wanted to keep a Mac around, she could do that. But I think, go to the Microsoft store. They have the Dell. You can look at that. They have the Surface Pro. And then you have your options all lined up, and you can decide whether you want to run Windows on a Macintosh or if I like a touch screen. I think a touch screen is surprisingly useful.
Mm-hmm.
So you might want to consider that.
Okay. Because she's doing a lot of data manipulation.
Yeah. So. Yeah, she's probably using Excel then, right? Or some dedicated software that she might have to use.
Yeah. And then my only other question is on the size of the memory and the hard drive.
Well, you'll see. For instance, the Dell that I just described, they have at the Microsoft store with top-of-the-line specs, you know, an Intel i7, which is probably more than you need, 8 gigs of RAM, a big SSD, 256 SSD, that's this disk drive. That's a great setup for $1,400. That's a very top-of-the-line setup. Okay. Should get 8 gigs of RAM. That's probably enough, 16 maybe, depending on the software she has to run. i5 would be fine. But if, you know, if speed is of the essence, i7,
yes.
I don't think i7,
yes.
That's not much benefit. And then I do like a solid-state drive, and these Dells have solid-state drives. Those make the biggest difference in speed of all.
Okay, good to know. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for my
pleasure.
Today. I appreciate that.
You're a nice mom to do this. That's great. Help her out.
Thank you.
That's nice.
Yes.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, I love these Dells. And the new XPS 13, which just came out, I have the... one that came out earlier this year and is really spectacular. And I love the Surface Books, but Microsoft just charges too much for those. I feel like they're overpriced. Mike, Portland, Maine, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Leo. How you doing today?
Good to talk to you.
Great show as always.
Thank you.
I do a little bit of podcasting here and there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm guests on other people's shows, the airline pilot guy and the airplane geek.
Oh, neat. Neat.
And they're great shows. Anyway, and I sometimes use my ATR 2100 that I have plugged in with my USB port.
That's an excellent Audio Technica USB mic. Highly recommend them.
Yeah, very, very highly rated, and it's worked real well. But I also plug in my headphones into my sound card so I can hear myself, and that's analog. But, you know, being an old radio guy, I'm used to being able to hear myself in the cans. And when I can't hear myself, I think
I know.
The mic works.
I know. It drives me crazy. You want to hear yourself. It's funny because non-trained professionals probably shouldn't hear themselves. You know, when you listen on the cell phone, you don't hear yourself. It would confuse you. But radio professionals like you and me, we want to hear ourselves because we want to know if we're popping our peas or if there's noise in the background. You kind of want to monitor the output. Try plugging into the mic. Doesn't the mic have an audio jack?
It does, but when I'm recording into something, the output...
The reason you want to plug into the mic is the latency that's introduced by the sound card. That is annoying. It'll be echo, and that's why they disable it. It'll sound like it's a quarter of a second later, and that's very confusing. You sound like Lou Gehrig. Plug it into the mic. Live with it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo, smartphones. Got the new BlackBerry. Yes, I did. I got a BlackBerry. I was thinking about the last time I bought a BlackBerry was just before the iPhone came out. And I still have my BlackBerry Curve. Which is, it's so cute. it's not a bad form factor. It's a BlackBerry with a physical keyboard. But in order to put the physical keyboards on these BlackBerries, they have really tiny screens. Remember how small smartphone screens or phone screens in general used to be? Just tiny. They've gotten much better at screens. And in fact, one of the reasons, you know, one of the reasons we got rid of physical keyboards is to make room for the screen. But even if I put this next to the BlackBerry Priv, the new BlackBerry, even with the keyboard, the phone is half the size of the screen. And the Priv isn't even a giant screen. It's 5.2 inches. But you just really see the difference when you compare the two. The nice thing about the Priv is it looks just like a kind of standard glassy, you know, smartphone, like an iPhone or a Samsung phone. But it has this kind of secret ability. When you slide the screen up, there's a little tiny keyboard underneath there. For people who want a physical keyboard, I guess that would be a good thing. BlackBerry, they're smart. That's part of BlackBerry's secret sauce, isn't it? Is the keyboard. It's funny, though. I haven't used one in 7 or 8 years. And, man, I don't know how we ever typed with these things. Once you get used to the on-screen keyboard and the capabilities like swiping, to draw a word instead of tapping, to type a word. Going back to a physical keyboard is tough. Fortunately, on this new BlackBerry Priv, you don't really have to see the keyboard. It's only there if you want it. It's a nice phone. They did a nice job. This is the first Android BlackBerry phone. No more BlackBerry OS. Priced like one of the more expensive phones, like a Samsung or an iPhone. Anyway, we could talk about smartphones too. Smartwatches, sure, why not? And it's not too late for those last-minute Christmas gifts. You know, I was just thinking, of course, gift cards are, you know, you can always get a gift card. And you can even send them via email. So you could do that Christmas Eve. And the problem with buying for a geek is you don't know what thing they want. But you can always buy a gift card, an Amazon gift card or an iTunes gift card. Then I was thinking, you know, if you know your giftee, your geeky giftee is a gamer, and you know what kind of game platform they use, an Xbox or a PlayStation, you could get them a game now. You don't need a physical game anymore. In fact, nobody wants physical games. They download them all. So you could buy them a game and just send them an email saying, hey, I just bought you Fallout 4, which is a great game. So there are lots of good choices for last-minute gift-giving. In fact, it's a last-minute gift-giving paradise, thanks to the internet. Not too late to even go to Amazon. I think they're offering overnight for Christmas Eve. So you could go as late as Wednesday and get a gift from Amazon.com. It's a lot easier than it used to be. I tell you what, I don't want to go out. Just going in downtown in our little town there, you can't get anywhere. The traffic's terrible. Go to the post office, it's terrible. It's crazy right now. So this is where the internet really shines, I think. There's never a traffic jam on the internet. Chris, Ottawa, Canada, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. You have snow in Ottawa yet?
For the first time in a couple of years, zero snow on the ground.
Wow.
As of now. So it's pretty good.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it? Only those of us who live in California wish we had snow.
Exactly. For us, it's like fall. So.
Yeah. No. What can I do for you?
I wanted to say I'm a big fan of all your shows and
I've
been listening for years. My question is, 2 months ago, I purchased the brand new 12-inch MacBook. I really like it.
It's my favorite Mac.
I know.
I didn't think it would be because it's a slower processor. It's a Core M processor. It's the keyboard is kind of, there's less travel and it's kind of a weird keyboard. But I love it. It's so thin. It's light. This is my laptop.
Exactly, and for on the go, like I have my desktop for everything else, but just like on the go, it's really great. My question is, in January, I'm starting a new teaching position, and so I'm going to have my laptop plugged in at the front of the class for several hours.
First of all, congratulations. That's great news.
Thank you. And I've been looking around to find, because I found a couple, you know, adapters for USB-C for VGA and HDMI. However, the Apple one is the only one that seems to allow power pass-through. So if I'm plugged into the display with an adapter other than the Apple one, the battery is still going to, you know, eventually run out over the course of the day.
I will stop you right there. Don't get the Apple adapter only because it's $80.
More up here.
That's in the U.S. It's absurd. For a little bit of plastic. Now, the good news is that Type-C connector, which is the only connector on our MacBooks, is a standard. It's not an Apple unique thing. So that means there's lots of places you could go to get additional adapters. So you want power, but you also, you know, and that's when it first came out, people said, but when I'm charging it, I can't do anything else. And so Apple and others have released adapters that allow you to pass through power. And yes, there are other companies that do this. And in addition to having standard USB ports, the Apple has two USBs and an HDMI port along with an additional Type-C connector, which will pass through power.
Yeah.
There's docks, though. There's a lot of them that are even more sophisticated. There's some that will plug in, and might be what you want. They're like bricks that plug into the Type-C port, not through a wire, but actually dock to the MacBook and then give you all sorts of additional features. You'd love, for instance, an SD card reader. I would.
Yeah.
It basically gives you all the ports you'd have on a full-size MacBook, but then it's a dock, so you don't need to keep it there. There were a number of Kickstarter projects to do this. A lot of companies making these. I think Belkin makes one. You can, and by the way, one of the things you'd like to have, if you could, is Thunderbolt as well, and that is possible with Type-C connector. Apple's Type-C connector is a full-fledged Type-C connector. So
okay.
That's good news. That means that you can pass everything through it, including high-speed video and everything. So I'm trying to remember. I've seen a number of these. There's so many docks now. And I think that what Apple sells is not ideal only because of its price. And its functionality is limited. Like, I would love an SD card reader. Come on, for $79, $800 Canadian, you'd like to or something. You'd like to have a little bit more. And I'm just trying to find – maybe the chat room can help me.
Most of them that I found had everything except
the power pass-through. Yeah, you really do want power because you're – well, you have to because you're going to be sitting there for hours.
Yeah.
Lecturing up in front of the screen. And what else, what other connectors? You need USB?
Ideally one USB, but for what I need right now, just for the teaching part, is just power and either HDMI or a VGA.
Yeah. There was a really good one on Kickstarter, and the problem with Kickstarter is you don't know when you're going to get it.
Yeah.
And you don't know, if they're even going to make it. They raised 778,000. No, I'm sorry. That's wrong. They had 778 backers. They raised $60,000. But then they canceled it, and I was really bummed. I bought into this one, and it was called the Branch. It fit right in. It looked like a little extension on the MacBook. Fit right in and gave you everything you wanted, including power. And they raised $60,000, and then for some reason they just gave up. A lot of times that happens on Kickstarter. It's not that it's a bad idea. It's just that nobody can figure out how to, you know, manufacturing is a hard thing to do. Tell you what, we have to take a break. Keep listening, okay? I will have some recommendations. I'm going to have to do some research because I've seen so many. And I haven't bought any yet. I bought this Branch, but I never got it because it went under. I'll look. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Picking up the pieces of my broken dreams and my HP Stream notebook. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So thanks to the chat room, we found some answers for Chris. Chris will be teaching in January, and he needs to stand up in front of the class with his MacBook, his beautiful 12-inch MacBook, which I love. Problem with the MacBook, Apple was mocked when they made it earlier this year because it only has one connector, a Type-C, USB Type-C connector. That's the power port. Plug something into that. You can't do anything else. If you want to do anything else, you need to get adapters. But I like the simplicity of that. It made it a simpler, a thinner, lighter computer. And yeah, there's plenty of ways to get additional adapters out of that thing, including, and thanks to Scooter X in the chat room for being the first to find it, one from Otherworld Computing. And I should have known because they are a Mac-focused company. I've bought many a Mac product from them, external drives, internal drives, RAM. And they have a USB-C dock. Only bad news, I'm sorry to say, Chris, it's available for pre-order today, won't be out until January. So you're going to have some weeks in school when you won't have everything you need. It's also big. And I think that one of the reasons companies like Sitechi and others who are making Type-C docks for the MacBook don't pass through power is, and I would bet, because if you're going to pass through power, you probably need, in effect, a power brick, right? Or something that will, I don't know if it's a transformer in there or just dissipating heat, but that it is not something that could be too small. So this is a fairly big dock. I mean, it is not small, but at the same time, man, it does everything. It's got audio, it's got SD cards, it's got four USB 3 ports. It's got Ethernet, it's got HDMI video out. Doesn't seem to have Thunderbolt. Okay, we'll live with that. It does have video, a couple of different video ports, one Type-C and one HDMI, and then it does pass through charging. So this looks like the one to get. Not cheap, $159. So it's even more than Apple's solution, MacSales.com. I bet you there are some other solutions coming like that. USB Type-C is going to be the future. In fact, I'd be curious. I ordered it. As soon as we found it, I ordered it. And I will review it for you when I get it next month. But I'm curious if it'll work with other Type-C computers. For instance, the Google Chromebook Pixel is a Type-C charging. It should. It's a standard. It's USB. It's USB 3.1 Type-C. That'd be interesting to see if it works with other USB-C computers. Because you know what? Everything, phones, computers, everything, I think, is going to go Type-C in the next year or so. So there you go, Chris. Congratulations on the new job. Good luck. Elena, Claremont, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Elena.
Oh, hi, Leo. Oh, Apple doesn't sell refurbished iPhones on their website.
They don't.
They don't. They sell everything else. And so we're old, but we're ready to graduate to a smartphone, an iPhone 6S Plus.
Yay.
Yes, but we know we have to buy it full price to...
Well, there are other companies that sell refurbished iPhones. Gazelle, one of our sponsors, will do this. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.
Okay.
Amazon has refurbished iPhones on its Amazon Wireless site. So, but I'm nervous because I don't know, you know.
Okay.
I don't know what that means. Gazelle I trust because they check it and there's a return. You know, we want to make sure there's a return policy so that if it doesn't work as expected, you can return it and get your money back.
And then how do you keep, because we still have a landline, so how does one keep the monthly price low?
Ah, that's the big cost, by the way.
And
the phones are expensive, but then you got 2 years commitment. Maybe you do, maybe not. So what I would suggest is, let's see, you're in Claremont, California.
Yeah.
I think you should check the coverage map. You know, there are less expensive carriers and more expensive carriers.
But anything but AT&T, sorry.
You have to be AT&T?
No, do not have.
No, don't. I agree. No.
Okay, good.
X, no. I like T-Mobile a lot. And if T-Mobile works in your area and where you go, they have very affordable plans. For instance, they hide it because they don't want you to know about it, but they have a $30 a month plan.
Oh.
Well, but wait, before you get excited, let me tell you what you get.
Yes.
Unlimited data and text. That's good.
Yes.
But you only get 100 minutes of voice.
Oh.
Now, this is for modern people. A lot of us very rarely make phone calls anymore. We do texting, we do, you know, we do data, we do other stuff, and we make phone calls, and when we do, they're short. And 100 minutes is 3 minutes a day. It's not a lot. But for some people, that's, and for $30 a month, that's a great deal. But you should shop at T-Mobile because they have a variety of choices. And the nice thing about T-Mobile, if you don't get the phone from them, is they're month to month. There's no contract. You can get the phone from them, and they'll spread it out over 2 years. So that might be another way to kind of get into an iPhone. And remember, if you don't get the latest iPhone, if instead of the 6S you get the 6 or the 5S, you can get them much less expensive. In fact, if you agree to sign up with one of the carriers, in most cases they offer maybe it's a 5 or a 5S, an older iPhone, for nothing.
We want the big one.
Yeah, you want the good one, don't you?
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
My favorite is the 6S Plus.
Yes. Okay.
Incredible battery life.
Yes, good. Okay, all right, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Yeah, the carriers have gotten very aggressive, and I think T-Mobile right now is probably the most price aggressive, but they don't make it easy. You have to shop around. And you, of course, don't get T-Mobile if the carriage isn't good in your area. You have to really make sure it works in your area. They tend to do best in urban areas. They don't do well at all in rural areas. And that makes sense. Sprint is one to watch. Sprint has historically not been great, especially for data. They made a bad decision some years ago under their previous CEO to support not LTE, but something called WiMAX, which was a horrible flop. But they've decided to move to LTE. They were purchased by a giant Japanese company, SoftBank. And SoftBank has committed literally billions of dollars to rebuild infrastructure and to expand infrastructure. So Sprint will be an interesting choice. As is T-Mobile, they're kind of an also-ran after AT&T and Verizon. They're the little guys. They have to try harder. And if their carriage, if their network becomes better, I expect it will soon, rapidly, they might be a very good choice as well. Apple's payment plan, if you buy from Apple, $35 a month spread out over 2 years. It's expensive. I mean, it is an expensive phone. It's a premium priced phone, and then Apple marks it up like crazy, as always. But it is a great phone, and if you really, really want it, I think it's worth trying to figure out how to do it. 8888 Ask Leo. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm so excited. Our EcoTank printer came at home. I can't wait. We already have, as you know, I've talked about it a lot, a Workforce Pro Precision Core. Love the Epson printers. I've been an Epson fan since the MX-80. Remember the dot matrix days? I mean, I have always owned Epson printers. Love Epson printers. And the new EcoTank printers are an example of why Epson is the best. Not only the best printer technology, Precision Core's technology, they've migrated it down from their industrial printers, is incredible. 40 million drops of ink a second. It's the fastest inkjet I've ever had. And the crispest, beautiful, laser-quality black text, vivid colors. My Precision Core Workforce, Epson Workforce printer does about 3 seconds a page. And it's done. And it's quiet. And it's fast. There's no warm-up. Auto two-sided printing. It saves me a lot of paper. 30-page auto document feeder that really works. That's nice. Contracts, I just take out the staple, put them in there, and I've got it all scanned in. It scans to the cloud as well as locally. It's completely wireless, uses Wi-Fi, and you even get wireless printing from tablets and smartphones. So that's just Epson. Now, they've done the EcoTank. Now, you know, of course, you have your choice, but this is great. If you get irritated by having to go get more cartridges, running out of ink in the middle of a print shop, you'll love this. 2 years of ink in the box with the printer. That's about 50 ink cartridges worth. And when you run out of ink after a couple of years, low-cost, ultra-low-cost replacement ink bottles make it a very affordable to keep it going. Comes with 11,000 black pages. Actually, this is one of them. The ET4550 comes with 11,000 black pages. This is the one we got at home. 8,500 color pages. If you are heavy duty, you know, you're in an office and you print a lot, they also have heavy duty printers that will do 20,000 pages in the box. Incredible. Incredible. I thank you, Epson, for, you know, doing the right thing for your customers. Making an inkjet printer affordable, convenient, fast. It's just a no-brainer. If you need a new printer, this is the place. Epson.com/EcoTank. We didn't even need a new printer, and we still bought one. Lisa says, I want my own printer. Okay, Lisa, it's a wireless printer. You can print from anywhere in the house with any device. I want my own printer. Okay. Actually, I'm glad because I wanted to see the EcoTank. Epson.com/EcoTank. Find out how to transform your home, your office, your work group printing for the best combination of ease and value. Turn to the new Epson EcoTank printers. There's so many features I can't even talk about. I mean, there's so many. I will scan to Google Cloud. If, you know, somebody, my daughter or Lisa says, I need a document. Can you scan it for me? I say, sure. And I share the Google Cloud PDF. Couldn't be easier. Epson, exceed your vision. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ann in Oceanside is next. Hi, Ann. Leo Laporte.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Yes. I have a computer, a laptop, an Acer that's about 8 months old,
yeah.
And something happened. It came up and it said hard disk problem.
Yeah.
The hard disk is failing. And to back up, well, I don't know how to back up. I mean, it did have a little box that said to back up, but I clicked it, but I don't really have anything to
do. No. Yeah, don't trust it. You want to do your own backup that you can really verify. This is too important. If your hard drive's failing, don't walk to the store and get an external USB drive.
Okay.
How much data do you have that you want to back up?
You know what? The only thing I really care about, and I'm totally illiterate for the computer, but I put a lot of stuff in favorites because I just don't know.
Oh, you want to back up your favorites? So that's teensy. You can email your favorites.
Really?
Yeah. If you go into your browser, you'll see there's a way to export favorites.
Oh.
And you export them and then attach them to an email and mail it to yourself. That way, it's at least in your email box.
Okay, now if the computer goes down, does that mean the computer is failing? It's going to just go down?
Yeah, so if you think about it, there aren't very many moving parts in a PC. But mm-hmm. And moving parts are what fail. You know, once the PC, once the chips are kind of broken in, if they don't fail right away, they're not going to fail for decades. It's the moving parts that fail. And that is especially that spinning hard drive that's rotating 5,400 times a minute or more. That thing's going to wear out. And those in most of the problems, I'll be honest, almost all the problems that I hear about, and it's things from my computer's slow to it crashes a lot, really come down to a failing hard drive.
Now, in 8 months, is that typical for it to be that quick?
No, but, well, first of all, it's probably still under warranty, right?
I think it is.
Oh, sure it is. It's 1 year guaranteed.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So you can at least get a new one if it fails.
Okay.
But, yeah, it can happen. So there's if you were to draw a graph of hard drive failures, there's a little hump at the beginning. In other words, hardware in general, if it's made in a faulty way, will fail very quickly. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of, I hate to use this term, but there's infant mortality. There's an early failure. And then it's kind of a gradual line going up over time. And you know, typically, a hard drive will last 2 or 3 or 4 years. After about 3 years, they start failing. About 8% of all hard drives every year will fail. So, it goes up and up and up and up and up. But some small percentage will fail in the 6 months and 8 months and 10 months. It's not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still some failures in that early stages. So you survived the first period, probably. And, you know, the truth is sometimes those warnings are spurious. They're not real. They're mistakes.
Oh.
So it's not a guarantee that your hard drive's failing.
Oh.
But it is certainly a clarion call to back up your stuff.
So you said go out and buy a...
Well, you know, it depends on how much you... It sounds like you don't have a lot to back up. Do you have documents on there?
I do have some.
Okay, and photos? You may have... You may not need even an external hard drive. If you have a USB key, you know, one of those memory keys, and it's got 8 gigs on it, that may be enough. You just back it up to that.
Okay.
In other words, you do need some device that you can plug into the USB port.
Okay.
And then just drag your documents over to. And you can do the whole documents and settings folder, or you can do my documents, my pictures. If you want to save things like settings or bookmarks, favorites, you'll need to explicitly do those. Email, usually people don't save because nowadays most people use services like Gmail or Yahoo Mail that keep the email on their servers. So you don't need to back up the email.
Okay, well, I'll just be in your notes so I can go back and look
yes,
at it.
Yes, James is writing this down.
I'm trying to write all this down.
No, don't worry about it. James is writing it down.
Okay, so...
But you could go out to a Fry's or a computer store and get, mm-hmm. you know, or Costco and or Best Buy and get a small... You don't need much, a terabyte hard drive. Whatever your hard drive is inside your computer is more than you need because most of that's occupied by stuff you don't care to back up.
Right.
So a terabyte hard drive will be 50, 60 bucks.
Okay.
Maybe less. You plug it in. It will show up on your desktop. It'll say, you know, new hard drive. And then you just drag over. This is the best way to do it. Drag over whatever you want to save. And you want to pay special attention to things that you may not be able to drag over. Like favorites, you're going to go into your browser and export them so that you can copy those. What browser? Are you using Internet Explorer?
I am.
Yeah, it's too bad because more modern browsers synchronize favorites. Chrome, for instance, and Firefox they will store your favorites on their server. And when you get a new computer, you just log into your account and all your favorites, everything, you know, your history, everything gets restored.
Oh.
That's a better way to do it. But but since you're using IE... Mm-hmm. Just export your favorites. You can do that.
Okay. And do you think I should just go get another one and just take it back where I got it and just say, give me another one?
First back that? Up because if they do give you a new hard drive, they will take the old one and your data is gone. So first back up. And then absolutely, did you buy it in a store?
Yes, at Fry's.
Uh-huh. Fry's. So, yeah, you get a one-year warranty in new computers. That's the law.
Mm-hmm.
So, you shouldn't, even if it's not failing, but back up first because Fry's will, if they do replace it, they're not going to get back up your data for you unless you might charge them. They might charge you, you know, say, yeah, we'll back it up for you. But I would just do it yourself.
Okay.
And they may, and what they may do, what you may not be thrilled about, is they may take it and ship it off, and a month later you get it back.
Oh yeah.
And that may not be. You know, the truth is, you could go and you could replace it yourself. It's not hard drives are not a super expensive part. But like I said, it could be a false positive because probably what you're seeing is something we call the smart warning. They created this idea, which was a great idea, that hard drives might warn you before they fail because hard drives will notice that there are a lot of errors starting to happen. And the smart stuff, which stands for self-monitoring analysis and reporting technology, it's smart, was in its original design supposed to let you know ahead of time and give you fair warning. The hard drive companies got upset. And they said, we don't want people to see error messages. So they dumbed down smart. And so now smart most of the time doesn't tell you anything. And sometimes it will tell you something's gone wrong when nothing is going wrong.
Oh, my gosh.
So.
Well, so they'd be able to tell me that when I take it over there, once I back up and then take
it
over.
Yeah. Who made the computer?
Well, it's Acer.
Okay. I would call Acer, not Fry's.
Oh.
Now, Acer may tell you call Fry's, and if they do, then you got to call Fry's. But I would call Acer. Still, they need to replace the hard drive because of the error message. Because they're not going to say, oh, well, let's wait till it dies and then we'll replace it. I don't think. I think they're going to respond to the error message, but I don't know. I have to say, I've never had a hard drive fail with a warning before it failed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The warning, but you're getting a warning, and I have had warnings with no failures.
So you just keep using it, and it's just...
What you should do, unless the warning gets annoying, which it might start popping up a lot, but if it's not annoying, I would back up. You know, the warning is nature's way of telling you.
Mm-hmm.
You better back up your data. You should be anyway, because hard drives mostly just die.
I know. The thing was so new, I just thought.
No, yeah, everybody says that. Yeah, but there's some percentage of failures. You don't want to be the 1%.
Exactly.
It's good to have an external hard drive. I should mention our sponsor, Carbonite. Also, you can use, I would do both. Get an external hard drive, get a Carbonite subscription. The nice thing about Carbonite, it's always backing up. So if you have a sudden failure, you go, well, there you go. You send it back to the shop, but you've got a backup. It's nice to have an external backup. Do. This is nature's way of telling you, make a copy of your data. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We got Nathan Staten, our musical director, to play a Christmas song. Well, you played Dominic the Christmas Donkey yesterday, so that's two. I love it. No barking dogs or nothing. 8888 Ask Leo. Last segment of the show. Next week is Christmas weekend, and I think we'll be doing some other, we'll do a rerun probably, yeah, because you're going to be busy. You're not going to be listening. But if you are, you'll have another, there'll be a show. And then the following week, we've got some great stuff planned for you, all new content. But I will be on a cruise ship that weekend. So, Heather, you don't have to come here unless you want to. If you feel like just kind of hanging.
Oh, shrew, because I was going to Cancun.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Hey, I like the candles. You've got candles in your booth. That's very fancy, very Christmassy. And of course, the Christmas tiara. everyone should have a Christmas tiara. Camden in Mission Viejo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Camden. Oh, I got to
push. I'm saying that I'm a big fan of the show.
Thank you.
I just think you're an awesome guy.
Oh, my gosh, Camden, you're going to make me cry. Thank you.
All right, and all of my question, there's a little sort of a backstory, I guess you could say. I have a headset that it seemed like whenever I plug it from my USB, it always says a blue screen comes up and says that your PC ran into a problem that we need to restart for you.
Boy, that's annoying. So you blue screen when you unplug your headset?
Yeah, it doesn't always happen, but it didn't really bug me, and it happened to be one day.
Do you use your headset for gaming mostly?
Yeah, if we're talking on Skype with friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did it one day, and I was like, oh, darn it. And I went back onto my home screen, and just none of my USB ports worked all of a sudden.
Ah, there you go. See, I think your USB driver is munged up. So and that would be, it's Windows, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be consistent with the blue screen when you unplug it, because what happens when you unplug a USB device is it unmounts the device, and so some code is running to take the device out, and that's crashing the computer. That's a driver. Only a driver can crash a computer. Programs, you know, if Microsoft Word crashes or Skype crashes, it's not going to blue screen. But if a driver crashes, it will, because drivers have access to system memory. And that's usually that means if you've messed up system memory, the computer's going to say, I can't recover from this. Let's redo it. Let's restart. So it's possible you have a bad USB port or a short circuit. In other words, a physical hardware problem in the headset, a short circuit can happen. Both those cases would be a hardware flaw. But the first thing to test always is, and by the way, does this happen with any other USB devices when you unplug them?
No, only the headset.
That's a little worrisome because, of course, that might be that their headset has a physical short circuit in it, and that's what's causing it. So I'd worry about that. But let's see if it's the USB software first, and that's easy to replace. Windows will do it automatically with plug and play for you. But what you have to start with is removing them, and to do that, you need to get to the device manager. You can do that by you know how to do that, huh? Windows key X, then you pick device manager, and you'll see the USB root device, and then you know that's the hub, and then you'll see a bunch of little things. You can literally delete those and restart your computer, and Windows should kind of set them up again. If that doesn't fix it, then sometimes you actually want to remove the software itself. That's not just deleting the entry in the device manager, but actually going into the entry and deleting the files, the DLL files. If you need to, you could do that. You might also, considering it doesn't happen with any other USB devices, I'm thinking maybe it's the headset driver. So maybe remove that first. If there's a driver for your USB headset, it's a USB headset, I presume. If there's a separate audio driver for that, a driver for that, you might want to remove that first. In other words, we're going to see if we can figure out if the software's messed up. The other thing you might want to try, if you have another headset lying around, is see if that does the same thing. If it does not, then I'm sorry to say, you need a new headset.
Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry. But you get the idea. This is actually really a good general skill to have. The troubleshooting steps for anything that goes wrong on your computer. You always want to narrow it down to the cause. So you have to do a little brain work. Think about, well, what could cause something like this? Could be hardware, could be software, could be the driver, you know, that kind of thing. And then do the easy things first. And slowly eliminate possibilities. And this is actually a great way to teach you logic, because there's logic as well in this. So, for instance, the easiest thing to do if you had a second headset, and this would be true if you had a mouse problem, a keyboard problem, all sorts of things, the easiest thing to do would be just to get a different headset, plug it in, unplug it a few times, see if you can make that happen again. If it happens with two different headsets, then the logic would be it's not the headset, it's the software or something else. Maybe it's the port, but it's not the headset. If it doesn't happen with a second headset, you plug it in, unplug it, you can't make it happen, you make the Skype call on it, then the logic would be, oh, it must be this. You've narrowed it down, in other words. So all troubleshooting is that. Start with the easiest. Work your way down as you narrow out, eliminate possibilities. You're narrowing down the possibilities. Eventually, you get down to the one, or you fix it on the process by slowly swapping things in and out. All troubleshooting with PCs comes down to that. And it's kind of fun. It's the same process that software programmers do with debugging. And it's actually a fun little exercise. Some programmers say, I like to debug. I like to find problems in my code. Some are very good at it because they have this kind of logical process that they use. Hey, thanks for the call. I hope you find a fix. Alan, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Alan.
Hello, hello, hello. You're not getting enough music? Well, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Oh, good tidings we bring.
That's right. I love it.
That's the first time I've been caroled on the radio. I love it. Thank you. Happy holidays.
Absolutely, to you too. Listen, I have a bit of a question, and that's about because I've just bought a computer from Newegg, and it's been a headache because I took screenshots, and the ports aren't what they promised, and a bunch of us. Anyway, so I'm trying to figure out what ports I actually need to have on a computer to be able to use the external hard drive as essentially like RAM, because I called once before, I'm doing a lot of video editing. It's big quantities of stuff.
Oh, you mean not RAM, but scratch disk.
Well, I was thinking the solid-state hard drive would connect it through a port.
So,
might
no. Fast. A, the solid-state drive is not fast. Even though they're fast, they're not as fast as RAM. And the port is also going to prevent you from using it at RAM speed. You only use disk storage for random access memory in the worst-case scenario to prevent crashing because you've run out of RAM. You don't want to use scratch drive, scratch space. You don't want to use swap space. It's not a good idea. So, you've got a USB port, but there's nothing, Thunderbolt, there's nothing, even the fastest ports aren't fast enough to use as RAM. Don't do it. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week and a Merry Christmas. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.